Hello, and welcome to the Monco on the Move podcast. I'm Jared Brown, Assistant Dean of Academic Affairs at Monco's Pottstown campus. So today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Kelly Corrado. She is a physics assistant professor here at Monco, and at our commencement ceremony this year, she was named the recipient of the Christian R. and Mary F. Lindbach Foundation Award for Teaching Excellence. The award recognizes full-time faculty whose teaching is intellectually stimulating, accessible for all students, and demonstrates a commitment to the well-being of students both inside and outside of the classroom. Kelly has been a faculty member here at the college for 21 years. In addition to teaching, she is also the observatory coordinator in the Advanced Technology Center on our Bluebells campus, where she holds community programming and student-centered research opportunities. We'll talk to Kelly about her Teaching Excellence Award, her Monco story, and ways she's helping to inspire the next generation of astrophysicists. So without further ado, hi, Kelly.
Hello,
how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And many, many congratulations on your award.
Thanks.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you found out, what you thought?
Well, it was kind of funny. I guess now that the ceremony is cut into thirds and spread out instead of one ceremony, they couldn't keep it as a surprise anymore, so they had to tell me ahead of time.
Oh, really?
Mainly because when the email was sent out to RSVP for which ceremony time you wanted, I swear I clicked that link like the moment I read it, and I was like, I'm going to be first because I'm picking the 10 a.m.
Right.
So that I can have the rest of
the day.
kind of off. And I guess it didn't go through, so I got like an email a couple of weeks later that since I had never RSVP'd at all, I was automatically put on the 6 p.m. ceremony.
Do you think that was by chance?
I don't know. I don't know. But I guess they were going to announce it at the 10 a.m. ceremony, and so they told me ahead of time so I wouldn't get, I guess, bombarded by news prior.
Yeah.
So I've been running the curriculum committee for about three years now.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. And you do an excellent
job.
Well,
thank you. But I stepped down.
That's a weight lifted.
It is. So Jim Bedrosian and I talk a lot. And he was like, oh, you know, they just want you to come in and thank you for all of your time for curriculum.
Which
They're inviting
sense.
The chairs.
Yeah.
Like there would be more than just me.
Okay.
What time worked for you.
And nothing fishy yet.
Nothing fishy at all.
Okay.
It's like
yeah,
kind of
sense.
Weird, but I don't know how many chairs have, I had not really been chair before, so maybe this was like a new thing. So I finally got to the building and ran into the president's office, and there was like my dean and my assistant dean and like no other chairs. And I was like, okay, I was dressed kind of casually. I didn't really think it was so formal. And then they like made space for me at the table, and it was still just me and Vicky, who I've known since I was hired. Our kids went to the children's center together.
Yeah.
So she starts talking to me about stuff and then like pulls out these pom-poms and starts shaking them. Hi, Vicky, I'm so sorry to tell you, but I really couldn't hear anything she was kind of saying because I'm going deaf. Like, it's genetic in my family.
Oh, wow.
So I can hear noise, but I have trouble understanding words.
Okay.
I was a little, like, nervous because I didn't know what I was there for. And then I couldn't quite really hear what she said.
With all the commission.
And I really felt like something big had just happened, but I really didn't know what it was. And so after she kind of stopped saying it, I was like, say that again? I actually didn't hear you. And then she said it. And then I was like, did I hear her right? Did she say I won the Lindbach? But I just kind of started teaching. I feel like I just started. Really? Don't you have to be teaching like a long time? And I think I sat there and processed it for a bit too long. And then I realized everybody was just looking at me. So I was a bit stunned. Took me a minute to
Well, I will say it is a deserving recognition.
Well, thank you.
And one that you can be proud of. And I'm glad that you finally caught on at some point, right? So you have been teaching at the college for 21 years, but your Monco journey starts before that when you were in high school.
It did.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So I went to Gwen and Mercy Academy.
Okay.
I finished high school. I knew I wanted to do astrophysics. I'd mm-hmm. been to space camp twice, so I kind of had it like confirmed. And I had gotten into Colgate University, and I knew that I was going to have to start in a high level, like calc-based physics course and mm-hmm. Calc 1, neither of which I'd really had. I just had high school algebra physics. So I decided to like get a little leap up. And I came here to Monco in that summer between high school graduation and freshman fall. So just turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a pre-calc course and physics 121 with Bill Brownlow, who's currently still an engineering faculty mm-hmm. at the college. And I have very distinct memories of the classes with him, of conversations after class with him. He honestly modeled probably a lot of my current behavior because he actually stayed after class. He talked about himself. He shared anecdotes of his home life or how he got interested in it or what he does with physics in his engineering field, and kind of really made the classroom feel like a group of friends kind of sitting together. And being 18 in like that adult situation, an adult environment, I was like, wow, this is what college is like. This is pretty neat. And I really feel like I don't think I would have gotten through my freshman semester if I had not just stopped and taken the same course with Bill before I took it again at Colgate. And I had sort of a refresher, but now with heavy calculus thrown in and all the other stuff. And it was really like,
how wise of you. Very wise.
Or nerdy. Or nerdy of me.
I would say very, very, very wise. I mean, it's not a light subject, right? And so you were going off to college and you wanted to be prepared. And I really appreciate you mentioning some of Bill's teaching mm-hmm. style. And it almost sounds like, as he did, you are as well, almost creating that community of learning
mm-hmm.
in the classroom, which is
really great.
And
then that continued.
Great.
I came back here.
You continued,
and we ran into each other, and he was looking at me, and I was like, yeah, you taught me. He was like, oh, my God, and now you're here.
How cool, though.
And now we've been colleagues for 20 years. Like, I've known Bill for a majority of my life,
yeah,
which is really phenomenal to think about.
It is.
It is.
So you were named a full-time instructor in physics and astronomy in 2007,
mm-hmm.
and then an assistant professor in 2010. Monco really was your first job, and
right out of the gate.
And you've been here.
Been here.
Yeah.
I graduated in like May, and I think I had my first adjunct class here in September.
So
it sounds green,
like
green.
You will like it. You'll like it here.
It's great. It's a great place. And now I'm tenured, so now they're stuck with me. So
I always, as someone who teaches myself, it is a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do it for the money or the accolades or the glory. But I think one of the reasons why we teach is because we want our students to be better off than we were in
mm-hmm.
a lot of ways. And so what keeps you and your passion for teaching going? What drives you to continue to teach?
You know, I think it's a mixture of two things.
Mm-hmm.
My passion for the subject, and it never stays the same. And I'm now like reteaching sections of the course because now James Webb is giving us data we didn't have before. So like, I'm never really very bored with it.
Okay.
And I like to show all of my students that, like, do you see how I'm rewriting stuff because I'm learning things I didn't know in mm-hmm. this ripe old age that I've been doing this for so long? Like, it really should be learning till you sort of die and realizing that as much as we know, there's still so much yet to discover.
Yeah.
And I want them to take that as, like, so what are you going to do for me then, guys? Like, I want you to start thinking now. Pick a question for me that I do not know an answer to, and I want you to go find the answer and then mm-hmm. come back and tell me. And then with the younger programming, you really see these like younger kids coming through that I'm hoping to snag like I did. Like maybe they'll come back to me when they're 18, 19. But they all really like the subject. And so I like throwing new things at them and watching them like discover that for the first time. And seeing a student who I know has been struggling with something in particular, like actually get it for the first time.
Right.
And I've had them literally like bang the table and be like, oh my God, I get it. And it's like, he got it. We like apply. Like,
yeah.
That's probably what fuels me the most is that I'm learning new things and showing them that you can like be excited about that and that eventually they will learn the new thing themselves and that it just takes a little bit of time. And it's a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun being here in particular. COVID was a bit tough. I really missed being in the classroom with the people. I just, it's the people that really fuels you staying here.
I've said this many times on this podcast, education has no age.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that you pointed out there's so much still to learn and and discover and think about. You've definitely changed probably and impacted students in ways that you've observed, but probably you haven't or realized. Have you had students in your classes say, I think I want to be a physics major now?
I've had crazy things like that occur.
Yeah.
I really do get quite an eclectic mix. It's mostly my astronomy course. The ones coming to the physics courses usually are on a pathway for some particular purpose.
Uh-huh.
Their program requires it for one reason or another.
Sure.
Or a transfer institution. But the astronomy course, because everybody kind of likes astronomy in some way, shape, or form, because it's, well, it's really great and, like, everybody should like it. So, like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get a lot of eclectic students that typically are not strong in science, theater, art, maybe just humanities sort of overall.
Mm-hmm.
And watching them discover something enough that it changes their whole viewpoint is really amazing. A lot of the times they still stay on their usual pathway.
Yeah.
They just have a different appreciation of it or understand it a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them in particular, one of my students was like a really great artist. Like she was phenomenal. And I really thought she should get into scientific illustration.
Because
like who the heck is good at both? Like most nerds like we are appreciate it, but aren't necessarily capable of truly getting the full artistic spread of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like, at least for me, I'm not. I got in trouble in art because I only did geometric figures and they wanted me to draw like an apple and I was like, it's a circle.
Right.
Like, they're like, no,
no. Yeah.
Just not me. By the end of the semester, she was like, I think I want to do this. And I was like, well, look, while you're still here, like keep doing your art thing because clearly you're good at it. But you need to jump into a physics course because, look, like astronomy is the fun play part. Like, really, it is. But the foundation, you still have to do the foundation. And a lot of us hate the physics but love the astronomy. And so that's usually what deviates you.
Mm.
Stay on your art path. Maybe do scientific illustration.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to – she got into physics and calculus, and she was great at it. And then she transferred in it, and then she went to grad school in it, and now she's not PhD astrophysics. She deviated a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't exactly know what that is, but there's a lot of different ways you can go once
you
get that high. But it's not art. She didn't do the MFA route. She ended up doing the science STEM route.
Interesting.
And it's just, you never know.
We don't know what we don't know.
You never know.
Yeah. I, at Pottstown, I ran into a young man, one of our students, and I'm still looking for him because it's sort of like, why didn't I get his name? Why didn't I talk to him a little bit more? But I was asking him how his semester was going, and he said he was really immersed into a project, and it was photography of the solar system. And he was taking pictures and showed me some of his work, and then he got off the elevator, and I'm like, I should have gotten his name. Oh, my gosh, because the Challenger Learning Center and, of course, our other aspects that the college really supports here when it comes to space and just embracing that part of the learning that can happen. So I'm still looking for him. So observatory at Bluebell.
Yes.
What can you tell me?
Well, it's fantastic for the most part. Like most things that are highly technical, she has her moments where she's not cooperative. Either the hardware doesn't want to work or the software doesn't want to work. And I have some research students who go up there with me. We were doing really well before COVID. COVID just like ruined everything. And when you have something that highly sensitive and you don't touch it really for about 2 years, because that's about the amount of time that I was not really on campus.
Wow.
Re-getting back up there and getting things resynced again, right. It's taken us quite a bit of time. But we're sort of almost right back to where we were, which is exciting. But it's really live science. So most of the time we're troubleshooting. And mm-hmm. So I'm up there going, do you see how frustrating this is? Welcome to a science lab. Like, there's never been a science lab I've been in where it's like everything works every time. Mm-hmm. Never, ever, ever. Most of the time you're fixing something. So it's a very good indication of whether or not they really want to do this. It's like, you know, it's a hard hill to climb.
Yeah.
And this is what it's going to be like. And if you still like it, then like, let's keep going. So it's a really great opportunity to give them a real feeling of what it would be like truly at the other end, mm-hmm. like end of college sort of era. But you really don't get an observatory like this at a community college.
No.
I want to try to give them as much of that as I can before they transfer onward. Because right. I'd like the transfer institution to be like, oh, I don't have to tell you how to use this.
Right.
Man, these Monaco kids are great.
I know, right?
We'll just keep taking them.
Right.
Like I know Drexel, which is where I came from. That's my graduate program.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same exact telescope.
Oh, cool.
On top of Disc Hall down where the physics department is. So it's like transfer to Drexel and walk in and be like, I've been playing on that
for
like
this.
A year.
Yeah, I know this.
To
wow.
a degree. Yeah. Some of the software is different, but it's a really great opportunity.
So you are inspiring many and hopefully, and I'm sure, inspiring the next generation of astrophysics. Can you tell us about the transfer partnership that you have as well as any of the local high schools that you're working with?
Well, unfortunately, I wouldn't say that we have a great transfer setup at the moment. We're actually going to
yet.
Actually, that is the yet because that's part of now that I've stepped down from curriculum committee where everybody comes to the table, I can focus on my curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really my partners and I, my other colleagues, are going to start taking a look at our pathways and our courses and making sure that they're really all up to date. Some of them do have to be updated because things like Jeb's Web are coming out and like you have to sort of update your stuff as you go.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular, and sort of independent of the college per se, I'm involved with a research group that looks at pulsar data. Hmm. The low level is truly for high schoolers, and they've been running this program with high schoolers for a while. But they realize, like, it's really ridiculous because if high schoolers can do it, then everybody else can do it too. And why aren't they feeding in the college level population?
Hmm.
And they were looking at how do you then feed high school to college? And that's sort of where we really do our best work is attracting the high school population and helping them find that destination that gets them to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came to me, Penn State Abington in particular, one of their professors used to teach here as an adjunct a while ago, and I kind of knew them, and they reached out to me and asked me if I would be one of the partner schools that would be in this pipeline to help push students along. And now that I'm involved in that, I've learned of things like Penn State Abington has created a scholarship for STEM students in particular from community colleges to go to the Abington campus. So not Maine, but Abington.
Yeah.
So it, you know, helps my partner over there.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to coordinate events between the two campuses.
Cool.
So we'll bring their students here because they don't have an observatory and they don't have that many telescopes. So they can come here and do a lot of the observing stuff.
Mm.
But over there, they have more of the high-level research stuff going on because that is what they do.
Yep.
And so we'll take our students there so they can see what Penn State Abington kind of looks like. And really the whole idea is to show them what the full pathway looks like, because it's an endurance pathway. It's not short, but this is what it's going to feel like. These are the things you'll be doing. And this pulsar stuff can go to like PhD levels. So like if you really get in and you stick with it for all these years,
it can take you.
You can actually just, it's not just experience time.
Right.
It can build into something bigger. So it's really exciting. And now that I'm off curriculum again, I can start to integrate that a bit more officially mm-hmm. with like our courses and our students and the college, yeah. et cetera. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. It'll be a busy fall, but
and yet to happen,
fun,
right?
Yes.
And yet to happen.
Yes.
I cannot thank you enough for spending some time with me today on the podcast, and I need to extend to you another congratulations for receiving and definitely earning the Limbach Award for Teaching Excellence. You clearly do tremendous work here, and I thank you so much for the time that you take to cultivate those learning opportunities with our students at Monco and beyond.
Thank you.
So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I'd also like to send out a special thanks to a Sound Recording Music Technology alumnus, Donnell Woods. And thank you for listening to the Monco on the Move podcast. Check back soon for stories about our Monco family. Until next time, I'm Jared Brown, and thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening to Monco on the Move. Students at Montgomery County Community College working in the sound recording and music technology program record, edit, and produce this podcast. Check out mc3.edu/onthemove to listen to our latest episode or download our podcast on your favorite podcast app. You can also learn about the latest episodes by following us on social media. Have a guest in mind you think would be great for the podcast? Email Eric Devlin at edevlin@mc3.edu or Diane Van Dyke at dvandyke@mc3.edu. And come back next time to find out more about what's happening at your community college and catch our Montco momentum.